Hey y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, super foods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods, or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times, proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. and 10 a.m. Mountain and Pacific Times. We welcome your calls during the live show on Monday evenings. That phone number is area code 646-478-0772. That's 646-478-0772. And you can email us during the week. The email addresses are mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is July 28, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me my wonderful, wonderful co-host, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, good evening.
Oh, good evening, my dear friend Alan, and welcome to you. You know, Alan and I had a wonderful conversation this afternoon. We don't get a chance to talk a lot except on the radio. And always a good thing catching up with you, Alan.
Oh, the pleasure's mutual, Mayor. You know, you have mentioned in the past that there was someone who had asked a nurse why they give the hepatitis B vaccine, and the response was something along the lines of, because that's the way we do it. And I have another one that's right up there with that one, Mayor. This comes from the immunizationpartnership.wordpress.com that a good friend emailed me, and I'm quoting from that site. Do you know which vaccine your baby received on the day he, she was born? Hepatitis B. The first dose is given to babies on their first, on their day of birth, so it must be pretty important, right? Right. So we have a new contender for the top reason for giving the hepatitis B vaccine at birth. It must be important, right?
Unbelievable.
So I just thought I'd share that with you. I hope you get a chuckle out of it like I did.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't so depressing, it would be extremely funny. You know, I think that the sad part about it is we have wonderful doctors in this country. We have wonderful nurses. But you wonder how much Kool-Aid they've been drinking the last couple of years. Because it doesn't seem that they have their thinking caps on at all. I think one of the problems is maybe by the time they become practicing physicians, they've used up all of their brain just getting through undergraduate school, medical school, and residency. Unfortunately, I think that's part of the goal of the medical establishment, to stop doctors from thinking. Because any doctor who thought it through carefully would realize it makes zero sense to give a hepatitis B shot on the first day of life. Even if you assume this vaccine is 100% safe, 100% effective, it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, even if there were no other reason, you would say, well, why spend the money on it unless there's a, you know, a real clear need? Of course, you add to it the questions about safety and effectiveness, and the concern just skyrockets, of course, but... strange. Anyway, I thought I'd let you know, because you know, before we might have been listeners might have been under the illusion that there was only one reason to give the hepatitis B, and that was because that's the way we do it. But now we know there are at least two reasons, that one, and since it's one they give on the day of birth, it must be important. So now that we have two reasons. You know, it's such a I don't want to belabor the point here, but it's such a condescending remark. It's
yes.
given on the day of birth, so it must be important, right? Right. I mean, are there really any adults or many adults that are you know, that stupid? And forgive me, I just don't know a polite way to say it, Mayor.
Yeah, no, I there is none. I want to just give a shout-out to Dan Olmsted and his wonderful staff at ageofautism.com. Website. He's put together some of the best writers, the best comments, the best articles. But there was an article today, a new vaccine, Head and Shoulders Above the Rest. And it's a parody. And it was written by a chiropractor. I'm looking for his name right over here. I can't find his name right in a second. But it's a parody about a vaccine. But he goes under the pen name of Dr. Paul Scratchit. And it's a really funny piece on how they were going to put out a vaccine for dandruff, and how the propaganda is the reason there's so much dandruff because there's those people who refuse to take the vaccine. It's phenomenal. Anyone who has a chance, read the article. He did a nice job, and it's here it is. It's Dr. Daryl Crane, and it's ageofautism.com. And take a look at his article, which is called New Vaccine, Head and Shoulders Above the Rest.
Sounds great, Mayor. Definitely we'll take a look at that. There was, on a less cheerful note, there was a recent article in Health Impact News Daily that is looking at government payouts to vaccine victims, and the recent months and quarters payouts, the flu vaccine has far and above all other vaccines put together has been heading the list, and I don't personally interpret that to mean that the flu vaccine is horribly more reactive than other vaccines. I think that's probably just because there's been so much push for the flu vaccines that there's so many of them being administered and now annually for everyone they can get to take one every year. But something like 60% or more now of the payouts coming out of the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program are payouts for flu vaccine injuries and deaths. And I'm just looking down a list of them they have here on the article. It looks like, I mean, just, again, most of these are flu. And many, if not most, of the flu injuries are either death or many of them Guillain-Barré syndrome, just really, really common in this list here over and over and over again. Flu, Guillain-Barré syndrome, flu, Guillain-Barré syndrome, flu. And now there's some other things, rheumatoid arthritis and some other conditions that they're listing here as complications from the flu vaccine. But the one thing I've seen over and over and over again, Guillain-Barré syndrome, when the flu vaccine, the flu vaccine, the flu vaccine. So it's really disconcerting. And I saw a similar list that is on a website from one of the more than 120 or so lawyers or law firms around the country that handle vaccine injury compensation cases. This particular firm, and I'm sure that I'm not pronouncing all the names correctly here, so I'll just apologize up front. Maglio, Christopher, and Toll. And they have a list of something like 166 of their cases, vaccine injury cases that this firm has handled, I think over the last maybe 4 years or so. And it's a strikingly similar list at a glance. That is, the vast majority are influenza vaccine injuries or deaths. And it appears that the vast majority of the influenza injuries are Guillain-Barré syndrome. And so when we hear what to me sound like just outrageously fabricated statistics like Guillain-Barré syndrome affects 1 in 1 million or 1 in 2 million flu vaccine recipients, it's just not credible statistics. In fact, I was speaking to someone just last week who suffered from Guillain-Barré syndrome as a consequence of an influenza vaccine, fortunately recovered, but not, it took several years to get to that place, and she was saying she felt she was near 100% recovery and very lucky in that respect. But she knows somebody else on the block that she lives on that is now suffering paralysis, Guillain-Barré syndrome from a flu shot. And if it's 1 in 1 million, you're not going to see too many instances where you've got two people on the same block.
Not very likely.
Her neurologist has 5 of those kinds of cases. And so We're getting a lot of misinformation about the occurrence of some of these conditions, Guillain-Barré syndrome in particular. And if the statistics, the estimates, let's say, not even really statistics, but estimates from the FDA, CDC, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, and other sources that say only 1 to 10% of these adverse events are actually being reported, wow, I mean, we've got something here that is phenomenally larger than what health authorities are letting on to.
Yeah, really, really frightening. I mean, because in 41 years of practice, I've never seen one case of Guillain-Barré. That tells you alone that it's a unlikely type of occurrence. I mean, it was something you had to know for the medical board examinations, but rarely did any doctor see it actually in practice. And it's been tied to the influenza vaccine for more than 50 years. So this is not something that's just coming out now, but slowly but surely. And the problem with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Board is they make it all non-binding, which means every case has to be started over again as if there were no cases before it. And that's one of the reasons why this atrocity can keep going on.
You know, Mayor, I read something recently. There was one, I guess maybe theory is the an appropriate word here, that a lot of or some significant part of diseases disappearing is that they actually didn't disappear, they just got relabeled. And along those lines, some have proposed that Guillain-Barré syndrome may really just be another label for polio paralysis. Do you have any, not to put you on the spot here, because I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but do you have any thoughts about that one way or another?
Well, there's no question about it, though, the relabeling. I'll give you the most common ones, and I've mentioned this before. When marijuana was only found in the ghetto, it was called weed, but they relabeled it when people in the middle class start using it, they call it grass, because no one wants weeds in their front yard. And it's just a way of relabeling something. When abortion became prominent in this country, no one wanted to use it, the word abortion, because it has just a horrific sound to it, the killing of innocent lives. And so they changed it to post-conception planning. You know, and I think it's the same, you know, it's the same thing with all this, is just kind of using words to influence the public as to what they should be aware of. When the March of Dimes was first, they were there in order to find the answer for what was called infantile paralysis. But when it no longer was a issue, either, let's say, because of the vaccine or in spite of the vaccine, then they not only renamed it polio, because that way you can scare people more than just infants who can come down with this disease. And so this is very common rebranding of names. Maybe the best are the sexually transmitted diseases, where they stopped using the word sexually transmitted disease and they start calling it communicable disease. Well, I don't know of any disease that's communicable unless that's sexually transmitted, but that wasn't politically correct, so it was changed. But this goes on all the time, or even like what they call whooping cough today. Almost all the cases are not confirmed whooping cough, but many of them are parapertussis, a sister of whooping cough, where many studies have shown it may be a direct consequence of the whooping cough vaccine, which is killing off weak strains and stronger strains and other either bacterial or virus particles, which will now become prominent and become just as problematic.
You know, that leads nicely into another article I saw recently on Natural News, where they're saying that there's a whooping cough outbreak that strikes a county in California where about 95% of the children are vaccinated. This is Yolo County, east of Napa County, near Sacramento, where they're seeing a larger spike in cases of pertussis than most other counties in California, despite the fact that roughly 95% of the children there are up to date with their vaccine. And the officials, according to this article, are aghast at the latest figures, which show a 900% increase in whooping cough cases compared to last year. And yet they've got 95%, that's about as high a rate as you can reasonably expect to get in terms of immunization coverage. That's a really good rate. And I know I've seen in my own investigative research over the years in the vaccine issue, early on, I saw figures of 80 or in the 80s as a coverage needed to get the herd immunity effect. And then I kept seeing information that in effect says, oops, never mind, make that 90. Oops, never mind, make that 93. Oops, never mind, make that 96 or whatever. You know, they just kept raising the level higher and higher because they kept seeing outbreaks in predominantly vaccinated populations. And so they just kind of kept moving that bar up and up. And you don't have to get, you know, too far up there before you have something that's just not realistically achievable, especially when you factor into this information that our good friend Dr. Tatiana Obakanich has, and probably others have said, that when you factor in that even if a vaccine is 95% effective in the sense that 95% of the vaccine recipients are going to have that desirable immune response to antibody production, that some of those levels will wane over time, over a period of even just a few months, well before whatever the next recommended booster of whatever vaccine is. And so you're just not going to ever have in any one time that 95% level, if that's what's needed for herd immunity. It's just not going to be there. But here we've got 95% of the kids supposedly vaccinated. Now, who knows what percentage of those children have the antibody levels, and of course this assumes that an antibody level in and of itself is protective, but even given benefit of the doubt for that, I don't know how much better you can reasonably expect to do than 95%. And maybe, isn't it ironic that this is a county where they're seeing a larger spike than most other counties? And this goes directly to what you were just saying, Mayor, that maybe the vaccine, instead of being protective, is actually contributing to the emergence of the same or a similar related disease or condition as in pertussis.
It kind of reminds me in physics, the principle for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And you have to hope that the reaction isn't worse than the action itself. It's frightening. I mean, it's a flawed theory. The whole vaccine theory is flawed. And, you know, one of the real problems we have is it's become so accepted as a knee-jerk. I've been watching a relatively wonderful TV series, except for one premise. It's about a virus that goes around the world and is killing a large part of the population. And on this one ship, they have a doctor who's going to look for a cure. And, of course, it's a vaccine. And she's on each episode, she's working on this vaccine solution. Except for the premise, you know, that's the answer. Always the answer, you know, is let's find a vaccine. Let's find a vaccine. It goes back to what my late mentor, Dr. Mendelsohn, said. There never was any vaccine that's ever wiped out any infectious disease, ever. You know, it doesn't make a difference, but polio, dealing with smallpox, all diseases have periodicity. And once their period of their being effective is gone, you know, they doesn't exist. Except, it seems, if you use vaccine material, because how come we don't see tuberculosis, we don't see cholera, we don't see plague, we don't see Rocky Mountain spotted fever, all diseases which killed huge amounts of people in history, but we're not vaccinated for, even though there is a vaccine for tuberculosis. But now we see the diseases like whooping cough, which was dying out, but I think that the vaccine material has given it a extra life, because it's no different, Alan, than I tell my patients over and over again, there is a time and a place for antibiotics, but it's rare and far and few between. And the bottom line really is that we have to be diligent. All of a sudden, everyone seems to be saying the same thing. All the major medical societies are saying the same thing, that we have to be diligent about antibiotics. It's just a matter of time before they say the same thing about vaccines and antivirals. We have to be diligent. And I can tell you what my late mentor, Dr. Mendelsohn, said. Diligent means you forget about it. That's what diligent is. Alan, are we still together?
Yeah.
Good.
I think I lost you the very last part of what you said there.
Let me tell you, I think we have with us on the line, because one of the things that I saw this week, it was Bobby Kennedy's book is coming out, it may be out already, on thimerosal. Let me take a look at the exact title of the book. And you would think, being a Kennedy, he would be afforded some slack, but he went to a select House committee in Congress to report it to them. And he gave them a copy of the book, and they met with him. And they told him, we don't intend to read the book, because this is junk science. It's called Thimerosal, Let the Science Speak. And I think we have with us our dear, dear friend, Dr. King, who may be one of the world's experts on thimerosal. Alan, why don't we bring Dr. King on?
Excuse me. Caller, you're with us. Is this Dr. King?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, Dr. King, I was thinking about you all day today.
Well, that's interesting, Dr. Mayer. Guys, because, again, I was thinking about your program because I missed it last week because y'all had technical difficulties.
Yeah, oh, my God, that we have technical difficulties. Merck Sharp and Dohme, I guess, is, or Eli Lilly, decided that they were worried about our massive listenership that would change the whole events of their profit margins.
Well, that's quite possible. I wouldn't know about that. But
I wouldn't either.
As far as the issue, I haven't seen the book. I have seen the copy that Jake Crosby put on the Internet, which is a pre-version of the book, which apparently has some chapters that, for whatever reason, Mr. Kennedy decided to delete. And in general, since I've read the whole thing, I can say in general he tells certainly what he knows about the issue fairly well, and he's fairly accurate. Not many inaccuracies. There are a few, but they're minor things, timing and same things he wouldn't know about because they're not common knowledge. That's about all that can be said about that. And just as the, and this is happening at a time when there's going to be another UN conference. They have follow-up conferences on the issue about mercury and vaccines, and that's coming up soon. And, of course, Congress is, again, attempting to deny that there's any problem, because we all know we have to just accept that it is and develop, quote, treatment. You didn't hear anybody say the word cure or cause, did you? But they're all saying treatments. You got to accept this exists, and we got to develop treatments for it. In other words, we got to make more money out of it. We've caused this mess, but now the cleanup is to do it in such a way we, whoever we are, make more money out of it. And as it was in Minamata when all those children, which is not nearly as many, but thousands were damage because of the mercury being polluting the bay and they're eating the fish, the reality will be that almost no one will ever be compensated for it. A very small percentage of all those are injured, and certainly none of the dead will be compensated. Their families may receive a little bit, but they won't be compensated because they'll be dead. It's kind of hard to compensate people who are dead for killing them, isn't it? So this is my reality. As far as the reality of thimerosal and vaccines, I would compare it to the whale in the living room as being a factor for causing damage compared to all the other factors which may cause damage also, but we have no or very little evidence of that damage in the absence of thimerosal. Because even though you keep hearing they took it out of the vaccines, you and I both know they just moved it from one set of vaccines to another. They moved it to the flu vaccines, which they recommend that everybody get every year. And so that if mercury poisoning is a reality, not only are they now making sure that young kids 6 months and older get it, but they're making sure that they increase the Alzheimer's populations too. And apparently they're being fairly successful, because when I first started listening to the words Alzheimer's, it was something that people over 70 had. Then it became over 60, and now we have early onset Alzheimer's, which happens in the 40s and 50s. So it's something you're doing, and GMO foods aren't helping any, don't get me wrong, but I would assume things, and I think Dr. Haley would agree with me, that the biggest culprit in the uptake is the fact that you're giving these people mercury all the time. And, of course, since there are vaccines, flu shots even, that don't have mercury in them, those people that are lucky enough or smart enough to get them, they're not at risk, or they're at much lower risk. And also makes it easy to say, well, see, not everybody's got it, while keeping no records of who got what kind of flu shots. Because it just so happens that the name of the flu shots that are thimerosal preserved in many cases is the exact name on the label of the ones that don't have any thimerosal in them or have a trace level, by trace meaning a level that's 25 times lower. It's not really trace, because on the scale of mercury poisoning, how shall we put it? Based on the one study that I analyzed that the FDA believes is a valid study for chronic toxicity of thimerosal in rats, for a dose of thimerosal to be safe to give to a developing human being, from conception to the time they stop developing, which, 20s, 30s, whatever, is something that these people would have to weigh tons, T-O-N-S. Multiple tons, to be assured that the level in a single thimerosal preserved flu shot would be safe. Now, I don't know of many children that weigh tons, and I certainly don't know of any even adults that weigh tons. I think 600, 800 pounds is about the limit. After that, they just literally can't breathe. They have too much weight on their lungs, and they just die. You know, someplace above 1,200 pounds, I believe, is where the limit is, but most people can't handle that kind of weight. And turning to your earlier comments about flu shots and Guillain-Barré and whatever, what do you think is causing that? What in the flu shot might be causing it? Could it be thimerosal be a causative factor? And as far as the deaths go, I think that's the biggest causative factor there is the other nasty effect that thimerosal appears to have on human beings, and that's the effect that's called vasculitis, which is inflammation of the vascular system. And that may be why the people are dying so much, because inflamed vascular systems don't work very well, and they're prone to things like heart attacks and strokes because the inflammation.
Dr. King, can you stay with us? We have to go to a break, but after a break, we're going to be right back with the Know Your Rights Hour.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com. Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and special guest chemist Dr. Paul King. Dr. King, please continue if we caught you in the middle of a thought there.
Well, again, what I was saying is that the safe level of thimerosal would require people to weigh, babies to weigh tons. Now, that's insane, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, Dr. King, I'm trying to understand this. These people aren't dumb. The doctors at the CDC, the doctors at NIH, they're not dumb. What are we missing when they can make such blatant lies? Blatant lies.
Well, you're missing the fact that twofold things. With what I've tried to explain on some of the previous programs, 25 to 50% of all medical practice depends upon damaging children with thimerosal. That's how it grew up.
Yeah.
And so you got to keep doing it, or else you're going to, you know, there's not going to be anybody to treat. You're not going to be able to give all these things if nobody's harmed. So that's one thing. Also, if you stop the harm all of a sudden, it would be obvious to people you caused it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got to do everything you can in your power to keep causing the harm while lying about what you've done to stop it.
But what about, let's go to practicing physicians. These are also brilliant people. And I got an email today from a doctor who said, I can't believe you're a doctor who's got boards in public health and you can do such damaging things like not recommending vaccines. I'm sitting there saying, I'm blown away by it, you know, and I don't even correspond with them because it doesn't make any difference. But how come so many doctors can't even see, maybe you should give vaccines, but there's another side to the story. It's not a black and white type issue. You've got to really weigh the risks versus the benefits.
Well,
and
it depends on how you weigh, too. Again, this is an argument I've had. Again, let's make it very simple so the public can understand. They're told the measles vaccine works. But the definition of what works keeps being changed because the original definition failed. Originally, it was said you'd get one dose of measles vaccine and you would have protection for life and there'd be no adverse side effects, yada, yada, yada. That's what was said, right?
Yes.
And then in the 1980s, they found out that wasn't going to be true. They started having this oscillating uptrend, and they caught it early, and they came out with this excuse, we need a second dose of vaccine because we need to vaccinate the 5% who don't get adequate levels of antibodies at the first dose, and that'll raise them up so they'll be protected. And if you remember what Dr. McConnell told you, he said that's a bunch of whatever, cow manure, you know, it's not true. You can't, whatever level of antibodies you get from being vaccinated the first time is to a first approximation the maximum level of antibodies you're ever going to get. If you give somebody a second dose, you boost it up, but not much higher than it was at the highest level originally. You don't get a huge boost from doing that that lasts. And not only that, within 6 months to a year, whatever that boost is, it's gone. So when they proposed to add more doses of vaccine in 2013, and I have an ironic thing to say about that too, when they proposed to do this to people who were healthcare workers and people going on to post high school courses, college, trade schools, and whatever, they didn't recommend one, but they recommended two doses, separated by a small distance in time, because they were trying to get enough boosting that would last long enough somehow to make people forget whatever as well. The reason I chuckled about that is that I'm looking at measles right now for another reason, some issue that was raised about a certain type of symptom. But I looked at a plot of, by year, what the count was, how many vaccines that people got, including the measles vaccine. And so it plots that. And you get this in the early years, you know, it was one, then it became the most, and then it was one, and it goes up to two, to three, to four, to five, and then it peaks and goes down to zero. And then it moved up to, you know, to higher number and went down. But in 2013, there was this huge spike in the people got only one dose of a measles vaccine, the MMR vaccine, in most cases. And almost all of those probably were the people who are now being advised that they're healthcare workers and they now to get one. Well, you know what? I was looking at the adverse reactions, and guess what? Older people, since almost nobody used to get recommended to get flu, get measles vaccines out, you know, after they were children, but older people are now appearing in bears with some very serious adverse reactions. Because you're giving people now who've been damaged by lots of vaccines and are carrying a lot of immune system damage, you know, from other vaccines they've been told to get, like flu shots. And now you're giving them one more vaccine, and in some people, since it's a live virus vaccine, which actually is three live viruses, all hell breaks loose. In fact, there's now, for the first time, I found a documented case where a woman got an MMR vaccine and was diagnosed with having consecutively measles, mumps, and rubella.
Wow.
And was severely damaged and has never recovered completely, although she survived, but she definitely has much lower health and impaired her quality of life and will for the rest of her life. That doesn't say it'll happen for everybody, because God, as infinite wisdom, made a large variability in people's immune systems. So what will get one person won't get another. In all sorts of other systems, we have this wide diversity where some people process mercury a lot better than others, and some people don't process it well at all. And there are lots of things you can do to make it worse, which turns out, by the way, Dr. Eisenstein, giving antibiotics, lots of antibiotics tend to stop the excretion of mercury dead in its tracks. So you wouldn't really want to do that.
Well, I got a question for you guys. I had a woman tell me this past week that she was diagnosed with measles and mumps simultaneously. I think it was like a week or 10 days after getting the MMR.
I wasn't even sure
if it was possible.
No. Well, again, like I said, this woman is 50 years old, was diagnosed with having all three of them essentially the same time. So you can have all three, measles, mumps, and rubella at the same time if you get an MMR vaccine. And in older people, it's probably much more likely is the risk. The risk becomes higher. And this brings us back to this 1 in a million risk numbers. I can tell you this, what little I know about studying the adverse reactions and stuff and whatever, is in general, whenever the CDC tells me what the risk is, I divide by 100. And that gets me in the ballpark of what the real risk is. And the classic example I use of that was they gave this first responders program, they're going to give them the smallpox vaccination, remember? And they gave about 39,000 doses, and three people died, so that's about 1 in 12,000 roughly, so that's, you know, 1 in 10,000. But they told those people it was 1 in a million chance they would die. And shortly after giving it to 30-some-odd thousand people, three of them dropped dead. You know, so excuse me, what was the real risk? Now they've turned out, they now mumble, 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 oh, we know what the real risk was, blah, blah, blah. People have certain genetic pattern, have a bigger risk. Well, that's true of all risk, isn't it?
Exactly.
If you have a certain genetic pattern that makes you susceptible to that risk, then if you're exposed to what makes you susceptible to being killed by something, then it usually kills you. If you're not susceptible, it doesn't matter how much. I mean, the other classic thing while I'm looking at this measles, guess what the worst thing I found was in terms of insanity? There's a report in VAERS where somebody was given 10 times the normal dose of vaccine. Now, apparently this person had a really resilient immune system because he didn't have any serious, except he wasn't feeling very good and had headaches for a while. 10 times! In other words, they took a whole vial, which was supposed to give him 1/10 of it, and they gave him the whole vial. That's 5 mLs of live virus vaccine.
Frightening.
Well, but they did it. There's also several cases reported where they gave somebody two vaccines by mistake. One day, and they didn't look at their own records, and the person came back in a few days later, they gave them to them again. Or cases where when the measles vaccine was available and the MMR vaccine was available, they gave both the measles and the MMR vaccine, you know, at the same time. These are all insane things to do, but they've done them. So this is supposed to be people who, as you would say, are supposed to know what they're doing. And to get back to this whole issue about, which is a nice simple example to give people to think about, is that you think of that the only two states that exist, either you have the disease, the clinical case of the disease, or you don't. But in reality, if you're exposed in a manner that infects you, which if it's injected into you and it's alive, it obviously infects you, then there's a whole range of things that can happen in between being no effect whatsoever and being affected so much you have a clinical case of disease. But not only that, one of them happens to be something that's much worse than clinical disease. It's called atypical measles, because unlike a measles rash, which is, you know, just uniform rash all over you, this stuff is like you become essentially one rash bump head to foot, severely inflamed and whatever, and you can lose lots of skin this way, and of course your chances of dying are not exactly zero. But this is everything in between. So what the vaccine was designed to do is to hide the clinical cases. And so by giving the vaccine, you're infecting everybody, which will stop a lot of people from being able to be infected by the natural measles vaccine because you'll make enough antibodies to protect you from being infected in a one or two pass nearby system. So the cases will all drop down because you're not counting people unless they have a clinical case of the disease. So they could come in with three out of four of the symptoms that are used to diagnose measles, and you can look them in the straight in the eye and you can say, oh, well, you don't have measles because you don't have the fourth symptom. Because these are the minimum requirements to diagnose a case. Okay.
Yeah.
Even more Dr. King, insane.
Well, one of the things we hear from health officials over the years is that, you know, the vaccine will protect you, but if you do get sick anyway, it won't be as severe a case.
Milder case.
It'd be a
milder
case. And some of these,
is a pipe dream. You show me the studies that support that.
Yeah.
I can't find them. If you can show me a double-blind clinical trial study where they do give the stuff to a bunch of people, wait till they develop whatever's, and they take half of them, and they deliberately expose them to the disease. They've been told this is going to happen. They're volunteers. They expose half of them to the disease, and the other half they don't. Okay? And whatever cases they happen to have, they should be almost nobody should get it, right? If the vaccine really worked, you shouldn't get the disease. But if you do, it's supposed to be a milder case. Well, then all those cases will be milder. In the practical world, not in measles, but in chickenpox, we know the answer to the question. In some cases, having regular chickenpox after being vaccinated can be much more severe than having just chickenpox by itself in some people. In fact, in some people, instead of having chickenpox after vaccination, they get shingles after vaccination. We're talking about young children. And that's a really serious form of the disease recurrence, re-flaring up after you, quote, had it. And we have documented cases now of children with they're being diagnosed with having the vaccine strain of shingles. So, excuse me. So if you took up the shingles vaccine to protect you against shingles, it will protect you until it doesn't. When it doesn't, if you've been infected by the other strain, since there are two different strains, it will double your risk of getting shingles because either one of the strains can flare up when your immune system's other protective mechanisms wear down because of stress or age or whatever. And this whole game where they said, and if you don't count that effect, if you ignore that effect and say, well, it'll go away, the British who've done the most recent study, they'd say that for the chickenpox vaccination program to be a break-even proposition, it would have to be a money-losing proposition for 80 to 100 years first. So how can you, anybody with a rational mind, say, wait a minute, you mean this is going to cost our society more money, this program, more money than not doing anything for 80 to 100 years, and maybe after 80 to 100 years we may be back to break even? That doesn't sound like the drug companies, the people who make the vaccine, they're happy. They're grinning all the way to the bank.
But, you know, I think Dr. King and Alan, I tell you what's exciting, because we're seeing more and more families who 10 years ago wouldn't have questioned any of this are now questioning, you know, and I think that's very exciting. They're questioning, why is my baby getting a hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life? And I find this very, very exciting, because the beginning of change comes when the average person all of a sudden says, I don't believe you anymore. And if there's any credibility to the vaccine program, they really overstated the case. And now people are going to reject everything. And that's pretty exciting. I find that very, very interesting. It reminds me, I was at a committee meeting at a hospital about 20 years ago. And they brought up some case that allegedly I had done something wrong. And it turned out they were completely wrong. But they were trying to do other things. And three of the doctors there said, you know something? You lied about one thing. I don't believe anything else you said about Dr. Eisenstein. And I think and these weren't doctors who were friends of mine, but they were offended that someone was trying to pull the wool over their eyes. And I see this with the vaccine programs. There may be some benefits somewhere, possible. But when they start doing things like giving flu vaccines to pregnant women, hepatitis B vaccines to newborns, everyone is starting to say, this doesn't make any sense.
Well, I've got a better one for you, Dr. Eisenstein. slate this race, this wonderful, terrible thing that people who are getting upset about the vitamin K shot, this is the new anti-vaxxers doing this.
Yeah.
That's how desperate they are to find something to blame people or whatever. And that's very interesting because you know who is to blame for that, don't you? The blame for the vitamin K problem goes on the failure of obstetrical practice to guarantee that the mothers have adequate levels of vitamin K.
Yes, right.
If a mother has adequate levels of vitamin K, she's going to pass it on to her child, and there's not going to be an issue at birth with hemorrhaging.
But it's also the issue of doing circumcision on the first day of life.
You were a Jew, aren't you?
Yes.
When does God say to circumcise children? What day?
The eighth day.
Excuse me?
The eighth day.
What day is that? Could you say that louder, please? What day is that? The eighth day?
The eighth day of life.
Then, excuse me, how can anybody who believes that God knows what he's doing do it any sooner when God tells you this is the day to do it?
Yeah. And we know by there's evidence that the vitamin K levels peak in newborns starting in the beginning of the second week of life.
Yes. And if you did need to, and that would mean also getting back to this vitamin K problem, it's the obstetrical problem. It's lousy obstetrical practice. Can't be anybody else to blame because you can test what the level is in a woman and give her supplements.
Right.
And also,
exactly.
By the way, vitamin K drops exist. You don't have to inject the baby. You can give the baby the drops. The other thing is you can do is stop the insane practice of violating God's will by circumcising children on the day of birth because God didn't intend it to be done.
Exactly.
If God wanted to be done on the first day of birth, he would have said, circumcise your children on the first day of birth. That's not what he told people to do.
Yeah, but let me give you one step further. We want to stay on the subject of circumcision. It's still a ritual as opposed to a required practice. And many of the rabbis have found many ways, like a premature baby, cannot be circumcised possibly ever at all or not until they reach a larger weight. It's, you know, it's not something that, but never
well,
before
again,
the eighth
I know
day.
That Judaism today has changed it to where, whatever, but if you were a Lubavitcher or a black hat, excuse me, the child will be, first of all, they won't have children that are premature or whatever because their practices of
right.
monitoring pregnancies won't have that. I mean, this whole issue about, well, you know, we do this to accommodate people who fail to take the proper nutrition during pregnancy. We have this problem with our obstetrical practices because they don't believe any nutrition is an issue outside
exactly.
the standard vitamins they give their patients. They don't
care. Yeah, the vitamins they give, which are full of chemicals themselves.
Well, they're some of the vitamins, you know, they're the wrong form. They're useless and problematic in other ways, but the point is they don't check to make sure that they're being absorbed. I mean, because there are people out there in the world who don't really absorb vitamins as well as other people, and they may need different forms or more to get the right number.
Exactly.
For whatever reason.
Alan, I'm impressed that Dr. King knows what a Lubavitch is or a black hat. Alan, do you know what a black hat is?
I live in New Jersey.
Oh.
I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
I see them when they come to look at stores they want to buy.
Yeah.
Because, again, they are business people, too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
and I've watched them, and I've actually talked with them because they notice I wear a hat, and they come and ask me about it. And I tell them, yes, it is a Texas yarmulke. And they laugh because under their hats they do have on a yarmulke, too.
Right.
But I don't wear it because I don't take my hat off, again, unless somebody is, you know, he says, "Oh well, if you don't take it off, you're not in a court of law. If they tell me I have to, I'll take it off." I said, "Well, if you want me to offend you, I'll be happy to. If that's what you believe, you like being offended, but I'm not supposed to offend you."
You know, it's very exciting. In New York and New Jersey, we have some wonderful Orthodox Jewish groups who are questioning vaccines, and it's phenomenal. I'm in contact with many of them, and I my hats go out to them. Because they are really doing a phenomenal job of educating all the families as much as they can reach. And they've done a spectacular job. That's the only word I could say. You know, being able to inform the public that think before you vaccinate. That's essentially what it is. And it works very well.
Again, educate, think, whatever. think about the long-term consequences, not today's short-term instant gratification. That's what has been used to trick people into doing it. Because they focus you on, well, he's not going to have the disease now. Well, we have the problem right now that what's happening is with measles. Well, maybe it's okay, balance, blah, blah, blah. You can say that, but not for mumps, because what's happening now, because there's a lawsuit that says that maybe the Merck's lied about the efficacy, how much antibodies it produces of their mumps component in their MMR vaccine. Maybe they lied. Well, what else is new? But in any case, for whatever reasons, we're now having people who've been fully vaccinated who now get to be in their 20s and whatever, and they suddenly get mumps when the disease is much more severe and fertility threatening, especially in males. So not a pretty sight. And so what we've done, we've traded something that was benign and didn't cause any problems whatsoever, because whereas measles rarely has any problems, mumps is almost never has any problems, besides you have swelling glands, have painful swallowing for a few days. Speaking from experience, I mean, it's not something you forget. So, to put them in real stark perspective, I was listening to this doctor who is a naturopath and a homeopath. And he was saying, well, you know, maybe the measles vaccine is okay because it dropped down the cases of measles. And so, it's what you say it works. What do you mean when you say it works? If you look at just one aspect of human health, it may work. But there's this huge chronic disease thing that keeps going up like topsy. And there's this huge increase in cancers and leukemias in children that keeps going up like topsy. And that has to be attributable to the vaccines, because even though the preclinical studies are supposed to be done to prove that vaccines are not carcinogenic or mutagenic, if you read the package inserts, manufacturers proudly say they didn't do them. And the reason this should be an absolute requirement is because vaccines are supposed to be given to people who are not ill at the time to prevent what may possibly happen in the future, because if you're never exposed to the measles virus, you can't get measles, can you? So this is a contingent risk, contingent on your being exposed at some time in the future. And if you never are, then there's no risk whatsoever. So the benefit must be such that you can't be hurt by it. And I don't mean just injured by the vaccine itself. And, of course, we do know that I think the Brucewicz decision was something I think about every time somebody mentions that. Do you know how many times in the Supreme Court decision they mentioned the word unavoidably unsafe?
Go ahead, please.
29 times.
Wow.
29 times. So they're firmly convinced they're unavoidably unsafe. Well, if they're unavoidably unsafe, then you're not supposed to be giving them to healthy babies.
Exactly. I mean,
unless you can believe that the overall lifetime benefits, we're talking about lifetime benefits, outweigh the lifetime risks.
Let me tell you, Dr. King, it is such a pleasure listening to you. I cannot even tell you. You've made my evening. Alan, I think we just have a few seconds left here. You want to wrap it up?
Yep, we are coming to a close here. I just want to real quick tell everybody listening where they can find all three of us. Dr. King online at dr-king.com. Mayor, of course, at homefirst.com. And myself at vaccinemike.com. And we've got to go. We have another caller. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get you this evening. Please call back next week or email us during the week. We'd love to hear from you. And I guess that's it. We've got to go. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Dr. King.
You're welcome, Dr. Eisenstein. Anytime.
You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and special guest this evening, Dr. Paul King. We're here every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Rebroadcast proudly on naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars' dirty hands. Demand. masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.